On Tech News Today, Ashley Madison hackers post the stolen data. Plus, the latest TV talent show is for makers. And we'll tell you about a new electric roadster that sounds like a spaceship. It's all coming up next on Tech News Today.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Tech News Today for Wednesday, August 19th, 2015. This episode is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Are you hiring? With ZipRecruiter.com, you can post to 100-plus job sites, including social networks, all with a single click. Screen, rate, and hire the right candidates fast. Try ZipRecruiter with a free 4-day trial now at ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. Tech News Today is a show where we talk about the tech news with the journalists who report it. My name is Mike Elgin, and our co-anchor today is ZDNet contributing writer Kevin Toefel. Hey, Kevin, how are you doing today?
I'm good, Mike. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. How's the weather on that side of the country, by the way?
Oh, it's awful. I'm in southeastern Pennsylvania, and it's just humid like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, well,
it's awful.
Well, thank goodness Al Gore invented air conditioning, because otherwise we'd be miserable. I have the strangest house. It was 102 over the weekend, and inside my house it was like 70. It was like great with no air conditioning. It was just amazing. Anyway, yeah. Why don't we jump right in the news? We have some great guests and some really interesting news, starting with this story. We told you on July 20th that hackers breached AshleyMadison.com, which is a hookup site that promotes adultery. Now data from that hack has been posted online. Greg Topo wrote about the story for USA Today and joins us now to talk about it. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on. Now, how much data was posted and where was it posted?
So it was posted on what's known as the dark web, and is about 10 gigs worth of data. From what we can tell, there are usernames, names, first and last, email addresses, and even some credit card information.
Greg, that's a large amount of data. Do we have any idea how many users may have their information actually leaked through the Ashley Madison hack?
We don't know yet. We know that Ashley Madison and two related companies say they have about 32 million users, possibly as many as 40 million if you count all the sites. There are a couple of folks reporting that maybe that's a little bit high, that some of these so-called users are just sort of people who are curious, logged on, and then sort of got the heck off. But, the company claims as many as 40 million people use these sites.
Yikes. And that's probably an exaggeration. I didn't know that adultery curious was a genuine category. So I understand that the owner of the site, which is Avid Life Media, initially denied the validity of this claim that this data was posted. They basically said, no, it's not really the data. Have they changed their tune? Do they now recognize that this is the real data?
Yeah, they're saying this is serious, and they're not exactly coming out and saying exactly what has been released, but they are saying that police are involved. They're saying that the FBI is getting involved, Royal Canadian Mounted Police, Toronto Police, Ontario
Provincial Police. Why do you need mounted police?
I'm not sure what role the horses will play. it's a Canadian firm, so they get all the appropriate authorities involved. And interestingly enough, I think they have an interesting take on this. They say, this is not hacktivism; this is a crime, and these folks, have committed a serious crime. I mean, when this group first announced that they, were taking this data and intended to put it online. There's sort of an interesting political angle to it. They were basically saying that the people who use these sites are, quote, and this is their term, not mine, cheating dirtbags. And this was sort of a vengeance that was being exacted. It's got some interesting angles other than just, like a credit card or data breach.
Yeah, well, we know the Mounties always get their man, so I don't know what they're going to do about women who are doing this kind of thing online. But actually, you just walked right into my next question, because I think it's the group called Impact Team, Greg. Is that the hacker group? And it seems like they just basically have a morality issue with the fact that this site is a site where you can go online and find people to cheat on your spouse with. And apparently there's another related site that's specifically for men. So is that really what this is all about? They just don't like the service that this provides?
You know, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, interestingly enough, to me, the most telling detail from this is as follows. So Avid runs, among other things, three cheating sites, if you will. They run Ashley Madison. They run a site called Established Men, which is basically for women looking for men with money, sort of sugar daddies, I guess, if you will. And then the third site they run is something called, and I'm not making this up, Cougar Life.
Yeah, that's the hilarious one.
Here's the thing. They have not targeted Cougar Life. So now draw what conclusions you will from that. They've just essentially just targeting the sites that men might frequent.
Yeah, don't blame the Cougars yet because we don't know.
Yeah, I don't know.
It is very, very weird. Now, there was some talk initially that this might have been an inside job. Is that still the leading theory?
You know, that's a really good question. I haven't done enough reporting to be able to say for sure one way or another. I wish I could tell you more.
It sounds, it feels, and smells like a sort of disgruntled employee type of hack. And, of course, it probably wasn't easy to do unless you had some kind of inside information. I'm sure we'll be hearing a lot more about this hack. And I'm sure that people who are users of this site will be freaking out about now. Because this information includes some of their, you know, preferences and all that kind of stuff. So not a good thing to have out in the wild, I imagine. And again, we're going to be hearing a lot more about this as we go forward. Greg Topo is at USA Today and on Twitter at GTopo. Thank you so much for joining us today, Greg.
Thank you. It's good to see you.
All right. We have some more news coming right up. But first, let's talk about ZipRecruiter. You know, if you've ever hired people, and I'm sure you have, if you run a department or if you have a small business, it is a pain. It's a huge project. You say, okay, now we have these three job openings, and now what do? You have to do step A, step B, step C. You go through all of this work. It is really, really a pain. Enter ZipRecruiter, and it's super easy. It couldn't possibly be easier to start your job, to post your job. It's so easy. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT, enter your name and your email address, and click the Create Free Account button. That's all you have to do to get started. It is so easy. And then with one click, you can post your job to LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Google+, and all of it very automatically. You can also search nearly 6 million resumes, but that initial posting that job is super, super easy. And you can do your whole job and do the hire and everything all for free. That's how quick and easy it is. And I encourage you to do that if you have an opening in your department or in your small business. And once those applicants come in, ZipRecruiter is going to help you weed out the people who are not that qualified. You know, sometimes you put a job on the internet and some people who aren't really qualified just basically roll the dice on it. And they think, well, you know, maybe I'll get hired. Who knows? I might get lucky. You don't want to waste your time on people who really aren't qualified, don't meet your criteria, and are not a good fit for your company. And ZipRecruiter will sort of filter those folks out, set them aside, and just show you the ones that are truly qualified. Super time-saving and super, super easy. They have a unique job matching algorithm that will basically figure out who's a good fit for you and who you are a good fit for. This is obviously a great service for people who are looking for jobs as well. And it's used by over 400,000 businesses. And again, you can try it now for free. We have a user testimonial from a user named Lisa, who said, I am a business owner yet novice when it comes to navigating these job boards and searching for qualified candidates for my company. This morning was another near catastrophe that I avoided due to the help of one customer service agent by the name of Jed. He not only helped me out, but went above and beyond to make sure that I was satisfied. For that, I am grateful and would recommend ZipRecruiter to anyone. Of course, Lisa is a happy ZipRecruiter client. The CEO of Twit is also another Lisa, who's another happy ZipRecruiter client. We use it all the time. Today, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. That's ZipRecruiter.com/TNT. And you can start posting your job in seconds. We thank ZipRecruiter for their support of Tech News Today. Intel's RealSense technology is designed to bring the interaction between computers and users to the next level. Yesterday, Intel CEO Brian Krzanich announced that RealSense is now compatible with a number of platforms, including Google's Project Tango. Remember that? Molly McHugh is an editor at Wired and joins us now. Welcome to the show, Molly.
Hey, how's it going?
It's going great, thanks. Now, Krzanich described the purpose of RealSense as the sensification of compute. What the heck does that mean?
It's kind of a strange term, but basically the overall idea of RealSense is that your electronics should be learning and kind of adapting and responding like a human does with senses. And the big thing that they're trying now is to give phones mapping and sensing capabilities so that you can like make a 3D render of your room and or an object in the room and then, you know, do what you will with that. So it's very cool, and it'll be a long time until we have that phone, but it's very neat.
Molly, I know that Intel actually has this technology in one of the Dell Android tablets already. And I know Google's Project Tango is an Android tablet that does similar things, 3D mapping and such. I'm kind of confused why these two are partnering together, and how exactly do we know is RealSense going to work with Project Tango?
Right. So they've decided to partner, and I think it makes a lot of sense. Project Tango, I think that maybe they have a little bit more expertise with depth perception and motion sensing, and that RealSense, their kind of expertise is 3D mapping and object rendering. And so combining those things, the thing that I think they're going to really make the biggest part of what they can do with this is indoor mapping. It's kind of a thing that I'm surprised we don't have as much indoor mapping as you know, we don't have that much yet, and giving people this ability to not only use Google Street View to get from your house to the grocery store and see a Street View version of that, but to see, you know, inside of a large shopping mall or, you know, more art museums, or, you know, if you're stuck somewhere indoors, I my mind goes to CES and how lost I get there every year, that kind of a place. So that would be very cool if we can start doing stuff like that.
Now, I don't have a real sense, and of course, pun intended, of how far along Tango is. I mean, they canceled their spectacular idea of distributing the initial rollout in Puerto Rican taco trucks, which just made me weep. But when will Google's Project Tango actually get real? Do you have a sense of when we're going to be able to just buy them in the ordinary phones that we buy?
That's really hard to say. It's really difficult for these, we think of them as more novelty kind of applications for our smartphones. It's really hard for these things to become, to get into the end user market right now. If you're not an iPhone or a Galaxy, even if you're a great phone, it's really hard to break into something. So when, you know, an operating system, their big draw is 3D mapping and motion sensing, that's still really hard. However, I think that the technology that RealSense and Project Tango are working on is something that I think all phones are going to have something like this, and it could be based on what they've been doing within the next, I'm hoping, 5 years. It doesn't seem that crazy to me that we would be able to do stuff like this.
You know, one thing that's interesting to me is that Intel has pretty much, I would say, failed in the mobile market. I mean, they've been behind ARM-based processors for quite a while. They've had to pay and subsidize and lose lots of money to get their chips and tablets. So I see this as a big win for Intel potentially. But do you really think, Molly, it's going to change the market and get more Intel inside these mobile devices just because they're partnering with Google on this?
I mean, it's really hard to say if just the partnership is enough to get this in, you know, to really change their market standing. I think some of the other things they're doing with RealSense might have more of an impact sooner. I think the gaming market with this kind of a thing is going to be huge with VR. Partnering with Razer for that is a really, really big movement forward. And that might be like how consumers actually start using this technology sooner, is gaming. I personally think the phone stuff is cooler. I want to see indoor mapping become a bigger thing. I want to be able to do that. But the VR gaming market is really huge right now. And I think they're a little bit ahead of everybody with what they're starting to use RealSense to do with that stuff.
And Intel, of course, also demonstrated a RealSense being used as a vending machine interface. I can't wait to try that someday. Molly McHugh is at Wired.com and on Twitter at @IAmMollyMcHugh. Molly, thank you so much for coming on Tech News today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
LinkedIn today unveiled an app called LookUp, which allows users to check out the professional details of the people they work with. Deepa Sitharaman is a tech reporter for The Wall Street Journal and joins us by phone. Welcome to the show, Deepa.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on. Now, the benefit here seems to be the ability to get information on people who haven't given you permission to see it just because they work for the same company. Is that fair or accurate?
Yeah, I mean, I think the benefit of the app is that you don't need to be connections or connected with the people that you work with. You can just look up their information, and it's all done by virtue of the fact that you work together. LinkedIn verifies that and then gives you access to their email and some limited profile information.
Deepa, I'm actually a pretty open kind of guy when it comes to my information and all, but, you know, I would think some people might be concerned, even though they work together with their colleagues. Is it a vast array of information that LookUp would provide, or is there a limited amount of information? Like, what type of information could I see about my coworkers, for example?
Well, you can get their name, you can get their title, but not yet their department. You can get past and future experience, where they went to school, and whatever skills they put down on their LinkedIn profile. You don't get things like mutual friends. You don't get the list of their connections. You don't get recommendations and endorsements and other things that that you get on LinkedIn, and you don't automatically get their phone number. So it's a lot more information than you would probably get in a company directory because it has that historical perspective, but it's much more likely to be kept up to date. So it's a lot more functional.
Yeah, and one of the things that strikes me about this is that you have a different range of people depending on what kind of company you work for. I mean, I work for Twit, which, it's a pretty small number of people relative to a lot of companies. I mean, I don't know how many people work for Twit, a few dozen. And you work for mm-hmm. Dow Jones, right? I mean, it's like you would have access to thousands of people, most of whom mm-hmm. are complete strangers. So it's a little, I think this might be slightly controversial, but of course, companies will have to be essentially the company opts in, right? I mean, the company has to have an official site on LinkedIn. Is that correct?
Yeah. I mean, but beyond that, it's not as if the companies are working directly with LinkedIn to make this available. You know, the Wall Street Journal and a lot of other publications or companies have these LinkedIn pages just just to be smart and have a presence on social media. That alone is enough to get, to allow this app to work. Yeah, I think there would be a little bit of resistance, but at the same time, something like 30% of searches on LinkedIn are for coworkers. People are struggling with their internal directories. They're outdated. I know I struggle with that personally. And so I think there are privacy challenges, but it has to be balanced with function and use, which this is what LinkedIn is trying to address.
Yeah, having worked for larger companies, I've worked for EDS and General Motors, both had over 100,000 employees at the time. I could see this being really handy, and it sounds like it's all handled at the corporate level. If you have that company page on LinkedIn, and you set it up, therefore these people can then get information about each other. But I'm curious, at the user level, is there an opt-out feature to prevent that? Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe I don't want, maybe I've not lied about my past experience, but let's say I've fluffed it for a little bit and I don't really want my colleagues to know that. So is there an opt-out function?
I think, there's an opt-out function in the sense that you don't need to download the app. You don't need to kind of engage or receive those messages. And of course, I guess LinkedIn would argue you don't need to be on LinkedIn, right? I mean, there's that line between what makes sense professionally and how to maintain some semblance of privacy within this sort of new framework. And I think with this option, LinkedIn has tried to create different controls so that you can, tell people exactly how they want, how you want to be contacted. They've put this information on a separate server than, what LinkedIn's information is currently on. So there are they've tried to develop some walls between the primary LinkedIn app and LookUp so that it is a purely kind of corporate directory function. But you're right, there's a lot of questions to you know, around privacy and data leakage, and it's so important to watch.
Very interesting, and it's clear that they're trying to solve the problem that really exists, which is that companies don't do a good job of keeping up their internal directories, and this kind of thing used to be handled internally. But again, a lot of companies just fail at that minor task. Deepa Sitharaman is at WSJ.com, which is the Wall Street Journal's website, and on Twitter at DSitharaman. Thank you so much for joining us today, Deepa.
Thank you.
The movie and TV studio United Artists and the media conglomerate Turner Broadcasting System are partnering with Intel to create a talent show for TV called America's Greatest Makers. Contestants will compete for a $1 million prize to see who can create the best wearable device or Internet of Things gadget based on the Intel Curie module. The show's debut is scheduled for the first half of next year. Kevin Toefel, this is way better than singing, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And that's a pretty big prize, $1 million. It's interesting because Intel actually touted their Curie module in January at CES this past year, and they had some prototype devices. And I remember a little bit of a brouhaha when people found out those devices actually had ARM-based chips in them because the Curie module wasn't ready yet. I mean, it's a prototype, so you can't really bash Intel too much for that. But this kind of gets back to what I was saying earlier in the show, that they're a little bit behind when it comes to these small mobile chips that are very power efficient. And I think this is a great idea to see the show to develop and all, but it seems like they're throwing money at the market right now just to get some partners.
Hey, you know, the market needs money. one of the things that we talk about a lot on this show is diversity and the fact that oftentimes our culture tells women and minorities sometimes that technology is not right for you. And something like this on television, mainstreaming the Internet of Things like this, for example, mainstreaming wearable computing, mainstreaming the idea that you yourself, you young inventor, can create a wearable device or some interesting invention that's based on digital technology, internet connected, and so on. It's something that is going to excite people. You know it will. I mean, there's going to be some kid who never really thought that he or she would ever be interested in this sort of thing who will watch this thing and think, wow, that's really cool. The process, it's different than I thought it would be. I could do this, and I have an idea, and I think I'll start chipping away at it. You know, this is just a great thing, I think. I'm really excited about this. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I think if it brings more people awareness to a crowd that didn't think they could program or make a wearable device, that's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, watchmaker Fossil yesterday revealed its upcoming Android Wear smartwatch at the Intel Developer Conference. It looks more or less like a silver Moto 360. Ship date and pricing were not announced, but the company said it would ship the smartwatch in time for the holidays, and I'm sure Kevin Toefel's review on that will be available before the holidays as well. Fossil said they're working on a connected band as well, and also a watch that's somewhere between a regular watch and a smart watch, watch that's kind of smart, sort of average intelligence. I don't know. Anyway, we'll look forward to all that.
Fossil's actually a name that's actually been in the smartwatch business before. People may that's not right. remember them. Yeah, but they did a couple versions of the Microsoft Spot watch back in 2004. I still have one in a closet somewhere. And the folks from Fossil spun off into MetaWatch. You might have heard about them in the past 3 years. They created their own smartwatch as well. So this is not new for Fossil, and I'm excited to see what they put together.
Yeah, me too. I'm looking forward to it. Well, in product update news, a messaging app that specializes in self-destructing communications now is a desktop application version. The service is called Confide, and we told you about it last year when it was still an app form only. Confide for the desktop works with Macs and Windows PCs, and as with the mobile version, Desktop Confide enables messages as well as documents and pictures, and you can even drag and drop those documents from Google Drive, Dropbox, Box, or OneDrive. The desktop version is actually easier to use than the mobile version, and messages are revealed only when the mouse pointer is hovering over the text. Kevin, I don't know if you use the mobile version, but you have to actually press and hold over the text, whereas with the desktop version, you can just move the pointer over and you can let go. You don't have to be sitting there applying pressure to the screen or the mouse or anything like that to see the message.
Yeah, that's obviously easier because on a mobile device, you really can't hover. We don't have sensors that'll really do that to any precision just yet. I don't really feel a personal need for this, but I think it's a great product and service to offer because there are a lot of people don't want their messages on servers or intercepted by other people and so on. So, you know, if you want to send a destruct type service, this sounds like a really good one.
I'm probably like a lot of people. I get excited about these apps or these services. I download them. I'm like, I'm going to use this. I'm going to be like super secure. And then I kind of wander away and forget about it because it's really, I don't have any secrets really. I mean, it's like, you know, I'm not pushing around, you know, company secrets or anything like that. So yeah, I can never stick with them. So
oh, well. You know, every day isn't ask me anything. So, you know, exactly. All my information's out there.
Exactly. Well, in security news, Microsoft yesterday pushed out an emergency software update for Internet Explorer versions 7 through 11. The update plugs a critical security flaw. The vulnerability enables hackers to infect a system when users browse to an infected site. The infection can come from ad networks as well as blogs or just about any other kind of website. Unlike many such vulnerabilities, which tend to be theoretical, this one is actively being exploited in the wild, hence the emergency. The vulnerability was discovered by a Google employee, apparently. So this looks like a bad one. And Kevin, I probably shouldn't reveal my bias, but I don't know why anybody uses Internet Explorer.
You know, it's, a lot of people have to. When I was in the corporate world, that was it. You didn't have a choice. And this goes all the way back to IE7. So I'm not happy to see there's a virus or an issue out there, but I'm happy to see that Microsoft is responding quickly because enterprises in particular, they really will get hammered over these types of things if it's not patched quickly.
And it has to be said that the Edge browser in Windows 10 is not affected by this. So you are safe if you're using the Edge browser. We got a couple of big numbers for you. 48. That's the percentage of Apple Music trial users who have stopped using Apple Music, according to a survey conducted by MusicWatch. Okay, we have a related, another big number, but it's smaller, 21. That's the percentage of Apple Music trial users who have stopped using Apple Music, according to Apple. So there's a disagreement there. Who do you believe, Kevin Toefel?
I'm sure the actual reality is somewhere in between. We all know that Apple would love to tout big numbers. I think we'll find out a lot more when Apple puts out their quarterly earnings and we can kind of get an idea of how many people actually are paying for Apple Music because right now they have zero paying members.
Exactly, exactly. That's really the big metric. Well, in news you can lose, a Japanese car company called GLM is coming out with an electric roadster called the ZZ. Trouble is that roadsters are supposed to be loud, but electric cars are quiet. That's why GLM is turning to the musical instrument company Roland, which is building a special in-car synthesizer to give the Roadster what they're calling ingenious neo-futuristic sounds that will give sports car enthusiasts the experience of driving a spaceship on the road. So it'll have a skipping sound because, of course, spaceships don't have wheels. This is crazy talk. I mean, of course, cars have been doing this for a long time. I mean, I think this is one of the first cars to do this sort of thing, not quite with a synthesizer, but to actually tailor the sound of the car for the sound was the Mazda Miata in the early days. They actually designed the whole muffler and everything, and they kept tuning it with use, you know, they did focus groups and all that stuff. Is this what a roadster should sound like? But this is just crazy. Spaceship, you know, spaceship sounds, it's just weird.
Well, more importantly, as somebody who drives an electric vehicle, we sneak up on people all the time unintentionally. So I'm hoping that some sound is actually heard by people because they can't hear the car coming up on them. So I'm actually beeping the horn every now and again, say, hey, I'm here, look out.
Yeah, exactly. And I drive a Prius and, you know, I'm the master of stealth mode. I can go up a pretty mm-hmm. steep gradient without engaging the gas-powered motor mm-hmm. and I'm all electric. And yeah, I've had that experience many times where I'm creeping around and somebody just turns around and realizes their car coming at them and they didn't hear it at all. So it's kind of dangerous for people who are hard of seeing. There is a benefit to the sound, but I get the feeling that this sound that they're talking about is going to be on the inside of the car.
Inside.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So outside, it'll probably still be quiet. So anyway, very, very weird. Well, our TNT fan of the day is Janice Gherkin sitting right here, who posted this picture on Twitter. She took it. Who took this? John took it. Somebody. John took it. There we are. This was taken right before the show. So there we are. And there's Patrick sitting in his smoking a pipe pose. All right. Very, very cool. Thank you so much for taking that. And see, Tech News Today is very real time. We have fresh information here on this show. Show us how you watch or listen to TNT. Just record a video or take a picture of yourself or your setup or your brick house and post it on Instagram, Google+, Twitter, or Facebook and use the hashtag #HowIWatchTNT so we can find it. Kevin Toefel, what are you working on these days? You got any interesting projects in the works?
Well, first, I'm going to delete that Ashley Madison profile that I put together.
Too late.
But after that, too late. No, after that, I'm hoping to have a Galaxy Note 5 in hand because that's the big device of the month, I guess you would say, because we've got Apple probably coming out in a month or two with iPhones and iPads. So, yeah, I'm excited to see what Samsung put together in their new bigger phones.
Yeah, it was kind of funny. You mentioned the Ashley Madison hack. The Washington Post's writer on this story, his title is he's either the editor or he's a writer specializing in foreign affairs. And I thought, by affairs, do you mean, wait a minute. No. Okay.
There's probably a site for those affairs too.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. And anyway, hopefully it's more secure than Ashley Madison. Well, Kevin Toefel, thank you so much for calling in today, and we will see you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks, everybody.
All right, take care. You can subscribe to Tech News Today by going to twit.tv/TNT and clicking on either the subscribe to audio button or the subscribe to video button. If you're ever in the San Francisco Bay Area, come on in and watch us as part of our studio audience like these fine folks right here. And just send email to tickets@twit.tv before you come in. You can subscribe to our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com, and you can vote up the stories you like if you'd like to see us covered on the show. You can also follow me at elgin.com. And don't miss our other tech news show, Tech News Tonight, at 4 p.m. Pacific every single weeknight. Today's guest is Greenbot Executive Editor Jason Cross. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is the Tech News Today. The show is produced by Jason Cleanthes and edited by Anthony Nielsen. My name is Mike Elgin. Thanks for tuning in. See you tomorrow.